Election Day is coming up. You've probably seen some ads for candidates already. And maybe you've seen an ad like this for something called Marcy's Law. It features actor Kelsey Grammer in a very non-comedic role.
I'm Kelsey Grammer. My dad was gunned down at home at the age of 38. 6 years later, my sister Karen was brutally raped and murdered. She was 18. When my father's killer was released and allowed to live out his days in freedom, we were never told. I found out through the National Enquirer. It seemed like a cruel joke.
In some states, Marcy's Law gives victims and their families more of a voice in the legal process. On Tuesday, Pennsylvania voters will get to choose whether Marcy's Law becomes a reality here. So why are some groups suing to keep the Marcy's Law question off the ballot? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. Mayor Rindy has been looking into the story behind the debate. So the idea for Marcy's Law started in California, right?
Yes. A number of years ago, a California woman named Marcy Nicholas was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. He was arrested, jailed, then released on bail. And Marcy's mother was on the way home from the funeral, actually. She stopped in the grocery store.
My husband wanted me to get a loaf of bread in the market.
And she saw him there, the accused murderer, didn't know he'd been released, was very affected and upset by this.
It was terrible. It was absolutely horrible.
And this eventually was part of the impetus for creating a law about notifying victims and their families about legal proceedings. Marcy's brother, Henry Nicholas, and their mother, Marcella Leach, spoke about this incident in a news interview a number of years later.
No obligation to notify us that there was a bail hearing, and no obligation to tell us to take our opinions into consideration as to whether our safety might be in danger, whether witnesses might be intimidated. And then, you know, we had to endure a year and a half of watching him drive around our neighborhood in a convertible.
Yeah, his parents bought him a intimidating new car. And then he'd drive past with his new girlfriend.
In particular, Marcy's brother, who ended up becoming an internet billionaire or a tech industry billionaire some years later, ended up spending millions of dollars to push for initially a Marcy's Law in California and then similar laws or constitutional amendments in a bunch of other states.
I think the most important thing that we need to do is to see the rights that Marcy's Law provides to the state of California, to the basic citizens, afforded to all the citizens of the United States.
And when did this idea arrive in Pennsylvania?
About 3 years ago, I think, the process began in Pennsylvania. And it's a long process. The legislature has to pass the exact same law twice in two different sessions. And then the measure gets put on the ballot for voters to decide whether it should be included in the Constitution.
So what exactly would change under this law?
Well, Pennsylvania does have a Crime Victims Act, which provides a similar list of rights through the regular law, through regular statute. Things like the right to be notified of legal proceedings involving the victim's alleged perpetrator, to speak during trials and parole hearings, to demand speedy trials, to refuse requests for pretrial evidence, to provide interviews and other information to the prosecution, and to receive restitution. This measure would put those into the state constitution.
Can you just say your name and your title?
Sure. Cheryl DeLosier.
I spoke to Pennsylvania Representative Cheryl DeLosier, who's one of the sponsors of Marcy's Law in the Pennsylvania House.
House District 88.
I interviewed her over Skype. And she said that the legislature has tried to beef up these rights by passing laws, and it hasn't been enough.
In all the time that we have tried to pass laws, it still requires that, oh, I'm sorry, we can't help you with this because the victims don't have those rights. So by putting it in our Constitution, we won't have to say that ever again because those rights will be enshrined in the Constitution to be able to keep the victim as part of the process.
The Marcy Nicholas case was in California. Are there victims of crime in Pennsylvania who are pushing for this law?
Oh, definitely. One of the leaders of the effort to get this amendment passed is the state victim advocate, Jennifer Storm, and there are many other advocates, as well as individual crime victims. I spoke to Lakeisha Anthony, who was a victim of a crime and now works for an organization that helps women who have been sexually assaulted.
So I do a lot of advocating in regards to legislation, in regards to victim rights.
And she said that incidents of the type that the Nicholas family was concerned about, encountering a perpetrator on the street when you're a victim and not knowing what's going on and not knowing how to participate in a trial, are all essentially infringing on the victim's right to participate in this legal proceeding, which is very crucial to them.
What it shows is that those who commit crimes have more rights. Those who commit crimes are more valuable. Those who commit crimes are taken care of by the system, and yet victims are not.
And it's emotionally difficult for them. It makes their life harder. And they should have some basic rights, which they characterize as balancing out the accused rights to be involved in the legal proceeding.
If the person who committed the crime towards me has rights, why shouldn't a victim have rights? It just sounds like common sense. Equal rights.
So does it look like this is going to become law?
Well, it depends in part on the outcome of the legal challenge by the ACLU. A judge just granted an injunction that will block the votes from being counted, at least temporarily, and then there will have to be a legal case to decide what happens.
When we come back,
it would effectively flip innocent until proven guilty to guilty until proven innocent.
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. I'm talking with Mayor Rindy about Marcy's Law, which could create a set of rights for crime victims enshrined in the Pennsylvania state constitution. Now, the ballot question is being challenged in court.
The ACLU filed suit a couple weeks ago saying that the ballot question itself was improperly put together, that it combines too many major changes to the constitution in one measure, and that that actually violates the state constitution. So they would say that each of these 15 items, or many of them, would have to be separated out into individual ballot questions. So a judge has heard those arguments and is expected to decide whether the voting on the Marcy's Law Amendment can happen, whether the votes will be counted, and so on.
Can you talk more about this argument that there are too many provisions in this amendment?
Yeah, it's a practice that's sometimes called log rolling, where you put in a bunch of different provisions into one ballot question. For example, some may be more popular and some may be less. And so the sponsors think that by putting in the less popular ones or the more controversial ones, people will just vote for the whole package. And according to critics, this is actually not allowed by the state constitution. And in Montana a couple years ago, a Marcy's Law measure passed and then was subsequently struck down because of this charge of log rolling. So the critics in Pennsylvania believe that the Pennsylvania amendment or the ballot question should be struck for the same reason.
So what are these controversial points in the amendment? Like, what are people really worried could happen here?
Well, there's a concern that creating victims' rights at a constitutional level will actually reduce or infringe upon the rights of the accused, which are considered bedrock constitutional principles. And I spoke to Elizabeth Randall, who's the legislative director for the ACLU of Pennsylvania.
The concern that we have around recognizing a victim as a victim in the process prior to a conviction is that it would undermine the presumption of innocence. It would effectively flip innocent until proven guilty to guilty until proven innocent. Giving victims rights and a say very early in the process makes an assumption already that the crime did occur and that the person who's been charged with it did indeed commit that crime.
A legal case, a criminal case, is between the state and the accused and not about the victim traditionally. And so they're concerned, for example, that if the victim can refuse to provide some pretrial evidence.
In common sort of parlance, that would be any kind of evidence that would be potentially exonerating, could prove someone's innocence.
that makes it harder for the accused to mount a defense. Or if the victim is allowed to have a greater presence during the trial, that could prejudice a jury, for example.
Have those concerns ever played out in places where this law was actually implemented?
There have been some problematic effects in some states. For example, in South Dakota, it turned out prosecutors were being overwhelmed by these notification requirements. Every time there's any kind of crime, even a small one, you have to send out notices to maybe multiple potential victims. And so it was kind of creating this bottleneck for the legal system, and people were sitting in jail longer waiting for bail because you had to get the victims notified first. And South Dakota actually ended up amending the law the following year to make it that victims have to opt in to the notifications. That's one of the biggest examples. And there are some other effects. For example, in a couple states, police officers tried to invoke Marcy's Law after they were involved in shootings as part of their job, saying that their name shouldn't be released to the public, which raised concerns about police transparency. So there are a number of sort of unexpected side effects of Marcy's Law that has the critics concerned.
We find it really reckless and ill-advised to amend the Pennsylvania Constitution with language that allows so many question marks and so many undefined, unresolved questions that it's a far too dangerous move.
Normally when we think about rights, we think about the rights of the accused against the rights of the state to prosecute people who are accused of crimes. How have victims traditionally fit into that equation?
Well, historically, victims were not really considered a party to the case or didn't have any rights in criminal cases at all. There are cases, plenty of situations where judges excluded them from courtrooms or disallowed their participation in a trial because the judge didn't want the jury to become biased or emotionally swayed. They wanted the jury to consider the facts of the case. But over the last several years, over the last few decades, really, a whole victims' rights movement has sprung up because of situations like the one with the Nicholas family. And so this has become a more accepted part of prosecutions and of judicial systems.
So is a law like this a sort of a reevaluation of how we weigh the rights of the accused and the rights of the victims?
Oh, definitely. Advocates use words like equality or balance, saying you need to balance the rights of the accused with the rights of the victims, which means creating a right for the victims. But this is kind of a historical anomaly. Traditionally, criminal prosecutions have pitted the state against the accused, and the state has so much power that the accused needs to have basic rights to due process and a fair trial and so on. And it was really just a two-way balance. And now with victims' rights, this creates sort of a third leg, which critics say is going to compromise the rights of the accused ultimately, because it's just another element in jurisprudence that wasn't there before.
So what do advocates for this law say to that argument, that this is a fundamental shift in the way we're approaching the justice system?
They would say that's true, that it's a fundamental shift, and it's a good one, because they say, as a victim, I didn't ask to be part of this process. I was dragged into it, often in a very painful, violent way, and that needs to be recognized. If it's not recognized, if, for example, a decision about the accused is made without my knowledge, for example, someone released from jail on bond, and then I run into this person on the street who has harmed me, this is a re-victimization, and the state is aiding this re-victimization or enabling it to happen. And Lakeisha Anthony, the crime victim and victim advocate who we heard from earlier, says that the victims she knows want to feel like they matter to the judicial system.
I think ultimately victims want their voices heard. They want to feel like they matter. They want to feel like that they have the same access as someone who's actually did something unto them.
And she says their experiences are important, are relevant, and really do matter. The question, though, is do they matter from the perspective of the law?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks so much, Shai.
If you live in Pennsylvania, you'll see a question about Marcy's Law on the ballot next Tuesday. The injunction issued means the votes won't be counted until the ACLU's suit is decided, but they may still eventually be counted. Voting yes means you'd like to add a list of 15 victims' rights to the state constitution. Voting no means you don't. You can find out more about Marcy's Law at whyy.org/the Y. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Are you a crime victim or someone accused of a crime? Have an opinion on Marcy's Law? Send me a comment on Twitter at Shai Ben-Yaakov. See you tomorrow.